Welcome back to Dark Florida, the podcast where we dive deep into cryptids, true crime, high strangeness, and all the eerie energy brewing in the Sunshine State and beyond. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, and today's guest is one of the most active names in the field of cryptozoology and paranormal investigation. That would be none other than Barnaby Jones. Barnaby is the founder of the Cryptids, Anomalies, and Paranormal Society, also known as CAPS, and is the host of Monsters on the Edge and the Paranormal Spectrum on the Untold Radio Network. His work has been featured in American Paranormal Magazine, as well as on My Haunted Hometown on the T&E Network, on countless podcasts and paranormal panels from across the country. Whether he's in haunted buildings or remote forests, Barnaby and his team have been chasing the truth behind the unexplained for years. Tonight we're going deep on Dogman, Bigfoot, high strangeness, and what keeps pulling him further into the unknown. And if you haven't already, make sure to check out my episode of Monsters on the Edge with Barnaby. It's called Dark Side of the Sunshine State, and it's now live on the Untold Radio Network YouTube channel. We get into some of the wildest cases that I've encountered here in Florida, and you don't want to miss it. Also, big news. The 2025 Caribbean Bigfoot Cruise is open for booking, with some of the top names in the field being David Politis, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and Dr. Mira Mayer, will be sailing November 9th through 16th of 2025 aboard Royal Caribbean's Symphony of the Seas, one of the five biggest cruise ships in the world, with stops in St. Martin, St. Thomas, and the Bahamas. There will be exclusive lectures, excursions, and plenty of Bigfoot talk in the sun. If you use the code DARKFLORIDA when you sign up, you'll get $100 of free merch just for using my code. But you need to act fast because there are only 200 cabins available. So book ASAP. Remember, that is using the code DARKFLORIDA when you sign up. If you go to gatherupevents.com and go to the Caribbean Bigfoot Cruise section, you can sign up right there where it says book now. Read all about the ship, and I hope to see all of you there. But in the meantime, if you have a story or you would like to be a guest on the show, please feel free to reach out to me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. And be sure to follow along with us on Instagram at darkfloridapodcast. And you can support the show at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. You can also follow our YouTube at youtube.com/darkflorida411. And be sure, wherever you're listening, to drop a 5-star review. It really helps the show. Now, grab your flashlight, your audio recorder, because we're heading into the woods and the weird with Barnaby Jones. All right, welcome back to another episode of Dark Florida. Tonight, I am joined by Barnaby Jones. I'm really excited to get the chance to talk tonight. You are the founder of CAPS, which stands for Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society. What got you into that and first cracked your interest into the world of high strangeness?
I've always been interested in the paranormal, cryptids, all that stuff, you know, the mystery, Stonehenge, Bermuda Triangle, all that. And I just never realized that Bigfoot was right here in Wisconsin. Otherwise, I probably would have got into this a lot sooner. But I'd been doing paranormal and some like ghost hunting and stuff prior to CAPS. And I had a few like really interesting paranormal encounters and stuff. And that just kind of kept everything going. And one day I ended up going up to this place in Upper Michigan called the Hayden Adventure. And it's 80 acres of private property that they got a series of 3 game camera photos. And the middle game camera photo focused on what some believe is a Bigfoot. So Craig and Barb Salk, the owners of the property, they sent this into Finding Bigfoot. Finding Bigfoot came out, investigated the property, and everyone wanted to see the place where it all happened, right? So they turned the property into this like place where you can come and see the evidence, hear the stories, share your stories, and not be ridiculed. And myself and my mom went up there to this property, got to take the tour, see all the evidence and everything for ourselves. And we found out that, you know, this stuff is right here in Wisconsin, in Upper Michigan. And Craig introduced me to the books by Linda Godfrey, who he had at one of his conventions up there. And I started reading these books. And in the books, there was this location that was in southern Wisconsin called the Burlington Woods or the Burlington Vortex. And this woods seemed to have everything from paranormal encounters to UFOs to, you know, the Dogman, the Beast of Bray Road was a couple miles away in Elkhorn, and even Bigfoot encounters and stuff. So one day, I was bored and called up my friend who was doing paranormal investigating and stuff with me, Derek. And I said, hey, you want to go look for Bigfoot tonight? And he's like, sure, I ain't got nothing else going on. So we drove down there and we got to the woods just at dark. So we didn't want to like go in the woods. There was trails and stuff, but we didn't want to, you know, go in and not know what was going on. So we just parked in this big gravel parking lot and kind of sat there and listened. And slowly and surely, this sound of this large creature came through the woods. And we're like, no, you got to be kidding us, right? You know? And so there's the parking lot, and then the side of the parking lot, there's this kind of like a hill that goes up, and then the woods starts at the top of the hill. And I pulled out this massive flashlight that I had in my car and started shining it along the tree line. And as I did, this thing pulled back from the tree line, and it had been leaning out, like holding down this tree. So the tree popped back up and this thing ducked back into the woods. And I didn't get a view of what it was, but I saw this massive movement back there. And what else is going to do that? It's not a deer holding down the tree, peeking out at us or anything. So we're like, I don't know what that thing was. That was big, right? So we sat there for a little while yet and nothing else really happened. And so we left, we went over to Bray Road, drove around, came back, sat there for a little bit more, nothing happened. So we went home. Well, this started bothering me, and I'm like, I want to know what that was. I got to go back down there and, you know, go through those woods and see if we can have anything else happen. So I started talking to a couple people at work and my mom and stuff, and we got a group of about four of us together, and we went back down there. So we went and looked where that tree had been bent over, and there was actually barefoot footprints. They were about 9 inches long, and they led from the woods back off into a farmer's field back there. But there was no other shoe prints. There was no other prints by it. There was nothing else up there. And they went through nasty woods. Like, you don't want to walk in that barefoot, really. So we went through the woods. We started going through, and we got to the bottom of this ridge. The whole woods, I got to say, is supposed to be a serpent mound. And in the middle of the serpent mound is a power line cut. So the woods kind of snakes along this serpent mound, snakes around, but snakes
no
around
pun intended.
This serpent mound. Yes, exactly. And in one of the loops of the snake is like a big marsh. So you got a ridge and then a marsh and then another ridge and then the power line cut and then deep forest on the other side. So we're coming along the marsh and then we hit the bottom of that ridge at the power line cut and it goes up, but there's a trail that runs along the marsh at the bottom. So we went along this marsh and we got pretty far into it and it started getting thicker and stuff that the trail kind of got overgrown. And we were trying to decide if we should turn back or, you know, what we wanted to do. And we started hearing like stuff moving around up on the top of this ridge from where we were. And then we started hearing these straight whistles like from our side and then from the opposite side of the marsh. You would hear a responding one, just these whistles. And they went back and forth for a little while and were like, that doesn't sound like a bird. I don't know what that was. And this is the first time we were, you know, out doing Bigfooting and stuff. So we ended up turning back and we're like, okay, we're going to go up on top of this ridge here to see if there's something up there, whatever this is that's moving around. And as soon as we started to like make our way that way, this massive branch gets ripped off a tree on the other side of the marsh from where we were. So that was pretty intense. We got that all recorded and stuff on our audio and video and that. And we went up to the top of the ridge line. We walked the top of the ridge. Nothing else happened. We came back out of the ridge and we're standing out on this power line cut. And we're looking down into this marsh on the other side of the ridge now. And out of the woods that we just came out of is this massive guttural growl. All of us just turned and looked like, what the heck was that? It wasn't it was like nothing I've ever heard. I've gone to zoos my whole life. I know, like, it's not a lion, it's not a wolf, it's not a dog. This is deep, just guttural sound. And so I had a handheld thermal. It didn't take video or nothing, it just took pictures. And I turned back around and I went back into the woods towards this growl to see if I could find anything. And we didn't find anything. There was nothing there. I couldn't find anything in the woods there or anything. So we finished going through the woods, got back to the parking lot. And then that night we decided to, two of us, myself and Michael and Derek, went back in. And then Michael's mom or Michael's wife and my mom stayed out in the cars to kind of watch the parking lot and stuff. And we went back to that ridge. Well, as we did on thermal, I caught something large and upright kind of walking along on the left side of us, which would be on the power line cut side. And it, I thought that it had laid down on the ground, but now going back later on and looking, it kind of started off on the ridge with us and walked down into the marsh. So this, I got three pictures of it as it kind of went down into the marsh. And we walked a little bit farther, and on the right side of the trail this time is this other massive heat signature that literally is like kind of standing behind a tree, and it would like sway in and out from behind it. And I was like, man, that looks like a Bigfoot, but you can't see it like with your flashlight or anything because it's so thick foliage there. And so we're like, okay, I don't know what that is. So we kept going. Well, when I got home, the thermal imager only has like an inch by inch and a half screen, right? So I got home and I blew up that picture that I took of this thing behind the tree, and it literally looks like a cone head with half of a body with an arm and a leg just standing behind this tree. And since then, we've gone back and investigated this area several times for several months after that, almost every weekend, and nothing else like this ever happened again while we were down there. But well, we did hear a howl, and we did see what looked like a large shadow of like a Bigfoot walk out. We had other encounters and stuff. We saw a UFO down there and all kinds of other weird stuff happened, but nothing really Bigfooty. But so this little thermal image was basically like half a Bigfoot stand from behind the tree. But when we went back and investigated, this thing was like 10 feet away from us. Yeah. So that's, then after that, we got, you know, more into, you know, like, well, we got to keep doing this. So that's how CAPS started. We officially became Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society. And we've added a whole bunch of more people to our team. Each person focuses on a different aspect of the paranormal or Bigfoot or cryptids or metaphysical. So when we go out on these different investigations and stuff, it allows us to look at these different phenomenon and experiences from all aspects of the paranormal, metaphysical, and different stuff. So there, that's how I got started.
I love how each person has a role in a specialty. I think that's awesome. But there's a lot, there's a big world out there, and a lot of the metaphysical stuff definitely ties into it.
Absolutely.
So you're out of Wisconsin. Is there anything like about it that is the reason why there's like this uptick in paranormal activity? And so you mentioned Bray Road. So for those in the audience who might not know what that is, definitely go look up the Beast of Bray Road in Linda Godfrey. And it's basically a dogman sighting that has been corroborated by a lot of the locals in that area. I'm sure you could explain it far better than I. But what do you think it is? Have you like picked up on any patterns while you're out investigating this activity, or are there any kind of like regional entities that have like surprised you?
So we have looked into the Beast of Bray Road a couple times now. I'll preface this by saying we have not found any evidence or any sightings of our own yet with the beast. We have worked very closely with Lee Hample, who actually owns the property that backs up to Bray Road. Well, not the one of the properties that backs up to it. He's been featured in Linda Godfrey's book. He was also on Expedition X. So some people may be familiar with him, and we've gotten a chance to go out and investigate his property a couple times. The episodes are on our YouTube channel if anybody's interested, but we never really had any dogman experiences there. It's always been like weirder stuff. But as far as things that have happened, like dogman and stuff, Lee has had sightings on his property. He's seen the creature, I want to say, three times now. And all of his neighbors have had stories they've told him. When he doesn't live there, it's a big hay field with a barn. And he owns a horse ranch down in northern Illinois. So he just comes up there and like mows the property for hay and then takes the hay down to his horses. But he does stay up in the barn sometimes. He has like a little apartment that he built in there and stuff, so he can stay up here when he's working and stuff. But there's sightings throughout Wisconsin of these creatures, not just on Bray Road, but it's the most popular site for these. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. Like I said, I try and focus my opinions and stuff on my personal experiences. And I've heard a lot of stories, you know, firsthand accounts and stuff of people seeing them and experiencing them. And I don't know what to make of them. I don't know if they're metaphysical or interdimensional.
Right.
Or,
you know. I know. That's what I was going to ask, is that, do you think that it correlates with some sort of like portal activity? But you said so that there's a concentration of them in more places than just Bray Road. But because it's kind of like when you hear Wisconsin and you're in the cryptid world, you kind of automatically go to that.
Yep.
But so you're saying there's, right? So you guys have that, and it's in more areas. So it's not just localized to Bray Road. That's interesting.
Yeah, there's some like up by, there's a place called Holy Hill. It's a cathedral or a church there that's on top of this hill. And there was quite a famous sighting there of a guy that was working for the county, and he was going around picking up roadkill. And he's pulled his truck over to the side of the road. He's got these loading ramps and stuff, like car ramps, that he drags the carcasses up into the back of the truck. And he had just dragged one of the deer carcasses into the back of the truck, and he was filling out paperwork, and he felt the whole truck lurch. And he looked back, and this dogman creature was picking up the deer carcass out of the back of his truck. And he freaked out. He just floored it out of there and left. And he's like, well, I kind of need those ramps, you know, to do my job, because he never put them away. They were still hanging out the back of his truck when he took off. So he went back to get them, and there was only one of them there. So I don't know if the dog man took the other ramp and the deer, or what happened to the other ramp, but that's another famous story that has been featured on a lot of TV shows and stuff. But that's probably maybe an hour away from Elkhorn, from Bray Road there. So that's, you know, totally different area of the state. And you know, there's a few up in the northern part as well. So last year we spent the majority of the year filming our brand new documentary that comes out on May 11th. It's The Hairy Man of Dairyland, Wisconsin's Bigfoot.
And I love that.
Thank you. And there's not anybody really talking about the Bigfoot activity in Wisconsin. Like Small Town Monsters hasn't been here. I've talked to those guys about coming up here and working with us with some stuff, and they had other stuff planned this year. So I was like, man, we got to do something. So we went out and re-interviewed a bunch of our witnesses that we had already talked to. We got brand new witnesses. We talked to other researchers in Wisconsin. We put our evidence in there. We got permission to use some footage of some other people's stuff that, you know, they've personally captured. And it's really a look at every aspect of Bigfoot in Wisconsin, from the evidence to the people researching it to the people who have seen them. And it's an hour and 40 minutes long, and it encompasses all these different things in it, so that you get a very broad, complete, what we'd like to call a complete look at everything that's kind of going on right now in Wisconsin. And so that's coming out May 11th on our Patreon and on Paraflix. It'll be released. Nice. So yeah, so that's what we've been working on.
I could see Wisconsin being a target rich environment. You guys border one of the Great Lakes, and like you said, lots of hay, so a lot of food sources. And now this might be an unfair assumption because I've never been, but it's kind of more rural, right?
Well, it's the driftless area. So it's a lot of like flat, and you know, a lot of hills and stuff in the lower part of the state. But the upper part, northern Wisconsin, is very thick, dense forests. So any like the top third of our state is pretty much woods.
Gotcha. So it would be the perfect place for something like Bigfoot or the Absolutely. Hairy Man of Dairyland to roam.
That's right.
That's awesome.
Yep, absolutely. We have several expeditions planned this year for our team and stuff, and we have another big project coming up, and we're always going out. This coming weekend, we have the Cryptids, Anomalies, and Paranormal Convention in Appleton, Wisconsin, and we're actually taking a group out into the woods to go on a Bigfoot expedition in an area that we've had a lot of reports from, like road crossings, chins, fence rock throwing and stuff, so that we're hoping to get some stuff this weekend. And we were actually just out there this past weekend as well, looking for stuff. So we're out there, I don't know, a couple times a month right now, going through the summer, I think we're going to be. So we tend to focus on a couple things. Like we do our YouTube channel. We have a series called Cap's Road Trip. So we film 6 episodes a year. of different places that we go and investigate, whether it be paranormal, Bigfoot, UFO, or what have you. So big investigations that we've worked on for the year, or big cases that we've worked, you know, for different things or stuff that's important. And then we also have a couple other little spin-off series. So one of the new ones that we have coming out is called Expedition Y. And so this series is going to focus on like a question, and then it's going to go into some research, and then we're going to do like an investigation stuff with it. So it's going to be a different format than what we're used to. And some of the stuff we're working on with that is like haunted objects. So we put out the question, you know, can an object be haunted? Can it hold an energy? So then we look at that topic, and then we investigate a specific haunted object, and then we go to a location that's a resale shop, pawn shop kind of, and see if anything there has anything specifically attached to it. So you get kind of an evidence research and then an investigation with this all kind of tied in. And then we're also looking into things like psychic abilities as one of the episodes. We are looking into the orb phenomenon as one of the episodes, and what do you want to call it, like hitchhiking ghosts, woman in white, kind of stuff. So those are some of the things that we're working on right now, as well as some UFO stuff that's coming up and all kinds of things.
Is there a particular place that you've visited and done one of these series on that has really stood out to you, or that was your favorite?
So a couple years ago, we put out a thing for each member of the team to pick a couple locations that they wanted to go. And when we go around the country to different conventions and, you know, speaking engagements and stuff, I tried to map out the different locations that people wanted to go and get to a couple of them throughout the year. And one of these locations, one of my investigators wanted to go to Gettysburg. And it's kind of interesting, I mean, but I was never really interested in it. Well, the guy that wanted to go to Gettysburg didn't end up going on this trip anyway, so he didn't get to go. But me and my mom went there, and I was like, yeah, you know, I kind of like history. You know, I like American history. I think it's kind of cool. I've gone around and I've seen like Mount Rushmore, the Liberty Bell, Statue of Liberty, you know, the kind of iconic stuff. And Gettysburg, I guess, is on that list, but it never really interested me. So we get there, and this town just radiates energy. It's like nothing that, you know, you've ever been to before, at least, you know, for me. And it was really an interesting night. We went out to three different locations with a tour guide and stuff, and got to just investigate our own and that. And we heard a cannon go off at about 3 a.m. We had muskets fired at us. We got to go to the location where the only night battle took place during the Battle of Gettysburg. And so my IR camera that shoots in the dark, the battery died, and I didn't have extra batteries for that camera out with us. So I switched over to my regular flash camera. Well, as soon as I started taking flash pictures out there, we started getting musket fire back. And I was like, this is really interesting that all of a sudden that I switched to this. And he's like, well, you know, that's how they found each other to shoot at him in the dark. Is they would wait for a musket to go off, and they would see the flash, and then they would shoot at the flash. And I'm like, man, so when I'm flashing, they're shooting at me. And he's like, yeah, that's really interesting. He said he's never thought about doing that on the investigations before. I was like, well, now you got it, because we got musket fire back at us. And, you know, it was a really cool experience. We also heard the ghost of a horse whinny. So we got some cool stuff out there, but it was just a really neat place to investigate. So
I've heard some crazy stories come out of Gettysburg. Some of that residual time loop just from all the loss that was there. Do you know about Robert the Doll down in Key West?
I've heard of him. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That is a haunted object. It's the equivalent to Annabelle. It's on that same line. It's supposedly, it can curse you, and you have to like ask permission to take its picture, and yep. It's in the artist's house.
Yeah, they had it up at MI Paracon a couple years ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he traveled.
I think so.
He travels.
Yeah. They had a doll that you could take a picture with. So, and I'm pretty sure it was Robert
probably him.
Yeah. So they had it like in its little own area that you had to go to and stuff.
Well, and so shifting gears a little bit, you'd mentioned earlier, and it kind of piqued my ear when you said that in your area that you're having also UFO activity. And then you were talking about the orbs. Are you attributing some of those orbs to UFO orbs or just energy orbs?
So that's a very good question. I don't know what to make of them. Like I said, we're currently filming these episodes. So we're doing some investigating. We have some actual orb experiences. So my personal experience with these things is we were up at the Hyden Adventure, the property in Upper Michigan that I was talking about at the very beginning there. And we were sitting out in the field there, Bigfooting. And in the woods behind Craig, I was sitting across from Craig. And in the woods behind him, this blue basketball size orb kind of shot out from behind him and moved through the woods. And I saw it with my eyes, but I was also had, because I had heard like stuff over there. So I'm filming with a thermal imager. And on the thermal imager, the orb shows up like a soap bubble. So it doesn't have heat. It doesn't have cold. It doesn't distinguish anything aside from you can kind of see this round like circle on the screen that goes across. So I don't know, but that was my personal experience with them. We went out to a private property where a lady kept seeing a bunch of orbs and a bunch of lights and stuff. And we did a huge investigation at her property. That's going to be part of that. Down on Lee Hample's property, again, by Bray Road, he has some really, really interesting videos that he's shared with us. That'll be part of this as well. That looks like he calls them galloping orbs. And there's like three or four of these things. And like, if you picture like a bunch of orbs like rolling, like they were in the water, like on a wave kind of. So they kind of go, they kind of undulate across. It's a really weird video, but they're bright, like headlight lights through his woods there in his neighbor's field. And they go across. So I don't know what to make of these things. You know, people attribute them to Bigfoot and, you know, aliens and stuff like that. But I always like to say, if you're out in the woods and you're looking for Bigfoot and you see an orb, that doesn't mean that the orb is Bigfoot. You know, that'd be like going out deer hunting and you see a Bigfoot. Well, is the Bigfoot a deer? No. So it's the same principle that, you know, just because you're experiencing one phenomenon while you're out looking for another phenomenon does not mean that these things are connected at all. There are so many things out in our world. Like I said, if you're out deer hunting and you see a Bigfoot or a dog man, you're not expecting that. You're not out there to do Bigfooting. You're out there to hunt deer. And now you're experiencing this completely new and random phenomenon. Well, you should take that same aspect to it when you're out Bigfooting and you see an orb or a UFO. You cannot attribute one to the other. They may be connected, but you cannot just say, well, I was Bigfooting and this orb showed up, so it has to be a Bigfoot.
So you kind of think that they're separate phenomena, but do you think that they are unified in the field of high strangeness?
Well, yeah. I don't know if they're separate. I really don't. I don't know that Bigfoot isn't an interdimensional or extraterrestrial.
It's really interesting, though, when I have talked to some people and they're, you're right, out Bigfooting and then really do have these strange orb experiences that have really left an impression on them. And yeah, I don't know how to explain it. I've heard some really interesting stories about balls of light descending from the trees and lighting up the area, hovering for a while, and then going away. And this is an area that has had Bigfoot sightings before.
I'll tell you one story here kind of along the same lines. And I've only ever heard like one other person have a similar encounter, but 100% true. I'm just going to throw it out there and tell you what happened, because we were out on the Hyden Adventure property again. We spent a lot of time up there out throughout 2020 investigating with Craig and stuff up there. And one night we were out in the woods and there's this large, huge teepee structure that's like 20 feet tall, 20 feet wide, just this huge structure up there. And we had just come out from there and we're out on this two-track road. And it was myself and Ethan, one of my team members. And Ethan was to my right, about maybe 30 feet away, looking the opposite direction. And I turned, and as I did, standing in front of me and a little bit to my right was a clown. And it had like, I contributed him to being like a French clown. He had one of those frilly neck collars on, like white, and then a black and white checkered like jumpsuit kind of, and a beret on his head. He had just deadpan eyes staring straight off, not at me, but across me, like looking towards the woods. And he had a long, not human nose. Like, if you ever seen Phineas and Ferb, Dr. Doofenshmirtz. He had that kind of a long nose, like really long. And I had owned a haunted house, so like Halloween haunted house. So I'm used to like all these weird props and decorations and stuff like that. And when I saw it, I was like, why is there a, you know, why is that out in the woods? And then it occurred to me,
what if what people were seeing then could have been some sort of paranormal?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be going back into the woods. And but have you heard of Paul Stobbs?
No.
Okay. So Paul Stobbs, he wrote a couple of books about the Nephilim. So he has a theory that the Nephilim look like clowns. And it's based off of some research that he's done. And it had to do with like, or excuse me, that clowns were based off of the archetype of the Nephilim, that they had that exaggerated mouth and like the cannibals, and their nose was red because they were eating blood and drinking. So that's why the nose and the mouth are red, and that the features are exaggerated because they're demons. And he explains it much more comprehensively than I am. And he's been on several different podcasts, but when I first heard him talk about that, I was like, that is so interesting, because when some people take like DMT or ayahuasca, they're seeing similar entities. Or I think maybe he had some DMT experiences or something like that. When you said that, I was like, huh, I wonder if there ties in, because, you know, there's always that theory that the Nephilim are spirits. So it's interesting. You saw this like exaggerated face with these crazy features. That's just where my mind went.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I've never taken drugs. I don't smoke. I've never drinking, actually, for being from Wisconsin. You know, I know that shocks a lot of people, but I've never drinking. I've never done drugs. I have enough weird experiences without doing any of that stuff. And I don't know. I did have, gosh, now I got to remember the name. Not Joshua Cutchins, the other one. Joshua Cutchins, Timothy Renner from the Strange Familiars podcast. And those guys work a lot with like fae creatures and stuff like that. And when I had Timothy Renner on, I talked to him about this encounter, and he actually had, I don't remember it, but he had told me that he had encountered someone else that had a story similar to that. So that's the only other person that I've ever come across that had any kind of similar stories or anything with a clown out in the woods. I personally kind of attributed it to, you hear like the screen memories from alien encounters, like these giant owls and stuff.
Yes.
And I don't know that it was an alien either, because, you know, again, this is going back to the orbs and Bigfoot, attributing one weird strangeness to another. But I've kind of plopped it into that camp of, you know, there was something there that kind of tried to hide itself as something else and went, oh, clowns are funny. You'll like this. It's not scary, you know.
The Ringling Brothers Circus, weren't they founded in Wisconsin?
There's Baraboo, Wisconsin is one of the circus capitals, right? So that was their winter quarters. And why you would winter in a winter state, I don't know. But we have the Circus World Museum down there. We actually got to investigate the Al Ringling Mansion, and we believe we actually got to talk to Al Ringling himself, as well as a couple other people.
In Sarasota, they have the Ringling Brothers Museum. You do wonder if that's connected. So if they are, it's kind of the same idea, sort of like with Halloween, is that sometimes we dress as the thing we're trying to invoke. And so if the clown archetype goes back to the Nephilim or some kind of creature, similarly a cannibalistic demon of some sort, when people dress as it, they're kind of taking on that clown spirit. That could definitely have some residual energy, especially if they're like invoking something. I would be so scared if I looked over and saw a clown in the woods. That would freak me out. That might do it for me.
It didn't scare me. It startled me because I turned and literally this thing was like a foot and a half away from me. So it was like, oh, and that was it. Like I said, it triggered in my head haunted house. I'm like, oh, it's just a prop. It's just a mannequin or something standing there. Like it just startled me that it was there. And then it started to sink in the realization of where I was. So I wasn't scared of it. It didn't move. It didn't like try and attack me or anything like that. It was just standing, staring off. And I don't know. It was just there.
Do you do anything in particular to protect your energy or your mental state when you're working in places that are so charged energetically?
We do when we go out in like paranormal and stuff, and certain areas like the Burlington Woods that I said, that's just kind of like this nexus of everything. We have, each of us does different things. Rez puts out, he's native, so he does like tobacco and offerings and stuff every time he goes into the woods. Our mediums and psychics and stuff do stuff personally to protect themselves. I have a few bracelets and necklace and stuff that I wear that for protection and that, and just kind of grounding in that when I go out to different areas. I usually don't so much when we're out Bigfooting and stuff, but if I know that we're going to investigate a house or something, like a private residence, that we know the activity there is more intense or weirder or possibly negative in some aspect, then we'll take extra precautions, especially going into that.
That makes sense. Are there any recurring things that have happened in your research, or numbers or synchronicities? Because I know earlier you said there was about 3 whistles.
There's more than that, but yeah. The first time that we ever investigated the Hayden property, we had a lot of owl synchronicities. And that was really weird. Like every time that we'd have something Bigfooty happen on the property, there'd be an owl there. And I know, like, you're kind of like attributing, like, a lot of people like hear the owls in the woods and think that they're Bigfoots and stuff like that. That's not what I'm talking about. But like, there'll be a stick structure and there'll be an owl sitting on the stick structure. Or there will be like a footprint of a Bigfoot and there will be an owl feather, like, hanging on the tree branch above it. Like, weird things like that, that kind of went along with it for the first time that we were up there. And after that, it kind of didn't notice it anymore. But that's kind of like a weird synchronicity that I would attribute to that. Well, one of the things that we were able to find up at Hayden that I thought was really interesting is with these stick structures. So on that property in particular, you have these teepee structures that are on different areas of the property and stuff. And when you look at them, if you map out the game trails in the area, the game trails correlate to sticks of the structure. So you draw a map of the game trail on the ground, and there'll usually be one main game trail that goes up to the structure. And in some cases, right before you got to the teepee, there would be this large X, and then you would come up to that. So that one didn't happen as often, but the majority of these stick structures on this particular property, if you followed the map of the game trails and the structure, it would lead you to more stick structures. So we also had another property up in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, and there was a bunch of stick structures there. And we tried this same theory to see if it would match up, and it did not. So it's a very interesting thought, and I've talked to a lot of other researchers and stuff to see if they, you know, could do this in their areas and stuff, but I haven't heard it like plotting out as well. But literally on this specific property in Upper Michigan, almost every single structure matched the game trails that it was sitting on. So that was a really, really interesting piece of evidence that we found up there.
We come across some pretty cool structures down here. I would love to try to apply that logic and experiment with it and see what we get. And I'll have to tell you.
Yeah, I would appreciate that.
Yeah.
It could just be, you know, like a regional thing, like this specific, you know, or it could mean something to a different species, or not a different species, but a different family unit or something. Yeah. So in Rhinelander, they don't do it that way. But in Upper Michigan, they do. So I don't know.
I have thought about that being a possibility. When you were talking about how you would find strange things, oddly enough, what we've been finding when we go out, and it's sometimes like 2 in a day, is we will find balloons. I know that sounds really odd, but it's not always in the same area, but just our research area is 100,000 acres total. So it's big. It's not just like we're just going to the same exact spot. We're really going to a lot of different places in this area. It's happened in other places. Like I'll go 200 miles away and it'll happen there too. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. What are the odds of that? But we will come across balloons, and a lot of times they'll be like hearts, or I don't know. It's just really interesting. And we just like, are like, okay, we're being gifted a balloon. We're not sure what it means, but we're noting it.
Have you, are you familiar with Dana and I can't think of his name, the Newkirks, Greg and Dana? Okay. So they did Hellier, which is a town in Kentucky. It's about goblins. It's on YouTube. They were paranormal researchers, and long story short, and they got this email to investigate these goblins down in Kentucky, in Hellier, Kentucky. And so this documentary series on YouTube, and it was, you know, anyway, they have a lot of synchronicities where they went around and they found balloons.
Oh my gosh. No way.
And yeah. So you might want to look into that too. Cause I can't remember offhand why they were finding balloons, but they would find like the cellophane balloons every place that they went for a while.
It's really odd.
Yeah.
It really is. We were, and even this weekend, we were out and we're riding along and I looked down, is that a balloon? Because we were on our bikes and sure enough it is. So we're like, okay, yeah, that's weird. All right, let's take a picture of it. We keep on going. And this was like later in the day and we were following a game trail to try to lead us to a part of the river that was dried up, because we're going through a drought right now. When the river dries up, you can kind of get into a few more places that aren't easily accessible during the summertime or when it's the rainy season. All of a sudden, we found another balloon. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Two balloons. It's strange because they keep popping up. I could send you a compilation of all the balloon pictures that I have now. They made it illegal here in Florida. Like, you're not allowed to do balloon releases anymore. For the environment.
Yeah. Lately, my mom keeps finding turkey feathers everywhere she goes. Like, she'll park and then she'll come back like from hiking or whatever and come back out and there'll be like a turkey feather by her car. Like, it wasn't there. Like, it'll be like right outside her door or on the hood of her car or something. She just found, this past weekend we were out, and it was like the size of a turkey feather, but it was bright blue, like a blue jay or something. But it shouldn't have been a blue jay because that is a huge feather. Like, it was probably like 8 inches long, 10 inches long, but it was bright blue. So I don't know. But yeah, so she's been having that lately. She took one from the Height and Adventure property a couple years ago. And she was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that. So she brought it back. So she put it back on the trail kind of where she found it. And then the next day she woke up and there was one like right outside her car. And she's like, I shouldn't have, you know, I would have seen that if you got out of the car, because she's there to put the feather back, you know. And then here's now another feather out in front of her car. And yeah, it's just been some weird stuff over the last like couple of years with her and feathers. So.
I've done that before. If I notice like a feather that really stands out, I'll try to look up the color or type to find out like, what is the significance of it spiritually, to see if it has any meaning. I've been trying to do that too with different wildlife that we see while we're out. As I noticed a couple weekends ago, dragonflies were everywhere. It was like so much that it was like noticeable and popping up all day. One of my field research partners has a book and it has all the animals. So everything, you know, dragonfly, hawk, gopher turtle, deer, bear. And it gives a meaning if you come across it, what it is. I think everything is connected. And I think that symbolism ties our world together. And although we might not understand it, I think that there's a meaning.
We have a thing in our family. Whenever any of our family has a funeral, when we're at the gravesite, you look up and there's always a hawk circling over it. And we're not native. We're all German. It's not like we're not like, you know, tribal or anything like that. That would have significant more meaning to us. Like, it's our family's bird or something like, and nothing like that. So it's just weird that, you know, we just always have this hawk that circles over the top of the cemetery when we're there.
It says that hawks are often seen as protectors guarding their territories and loved ones. And they represent a need to safeguard what matters most. Maybe that could be your loved one protecting you guys.
Absolutely.
I love that. Cool. So is there anything that's coming up for CAPS or your shows? I know you said you have the documentary coming out May 11th, a couple of conferences that you were talking about. Is there anything else big kind of coming down the pipeline?
So this coming weekend, May 10th, we're going to be in Appleton, Wisconsin for a Cryptids, Anomalies, and Paranormal convention. You can actually get virtual tickets. So no matter where you are, you can live stream it. They're just $5. You can go to wisconsincaps.com and get that. June 7th, we're going to be in Chicago at the Chicago Paranormal Convention. I have a bunch of library presentations throughout Wisconsin. We are going to be at UFO Days doing a presentation June 20th. I will be... Oh, Hodag Heritage Festival, May 17th in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. We have a couple really cool events in Wisconsin coming up. They're CE5 events, and we're working with PBS Wisconsin. So we're going to be filming for CAPS, and PBS Wisconsin is going to be down there filming as well for a documentary. And that is July 19th. And that's going to be in Southern Wisconsin. It's a free event for anybody that's interested in, you know, sky watching and UFOs and stuff like that. You can check that out. I will be in Illinois in September for SILCON and Van Meter Visitor Festival in September as well. So that's what I got coming up. So all that is on our website, wisconsincaps.com, under the public events tab. And like I said, the documentary comes out on Paraflix and on our Patreon. You can just purchase the documentary. It's going to be $3, or you can subscribe. And we release all of our YouTube stuff early on our Patreon. And then there's also some a bunch of stuff on there that isn't released anywhere else. So you can check out different other documentaries and stuff that we've worked on.
Is there any social media you want to plug where they can find you?
You can find us on everything from X, Blue Sky, Facebook, YouTube. Everything is pretty much Wisconsin Caps, spelled out the state, and then WI Caps on Instagram. So any social media platform that is out there, TikTok, X, all that stuff, we're on. So.
Awesome. I really appreciate you coming on. This is really cool. And if you ever get the opportunity to come down to Florida, open invitation, we can set up everything from a paranormal thing to more Bigfoot focus. You just let me know, because we've got a little bit of everything down here too. Some really cool spots. If you ever want to collaborate, let me know. And if I'm ever up in Wisconsin, I'm giving you a call.
You do that. Yeah. I'd appreciate that. I've never been down to Florida. I keep trying to get booked on conferences down there, so I have an excuse to go, but I haven't gotten the chance to get down to that corner yet. Louisiana, Florida, that kind of section. The farthest I've gotten was Georgia and South Carolina.
Okay, you're getting closer.
I'm getting closer. Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Dark Florida. I hope you enjoyed going deep with Barnaby Jones, from Dogman and cryptid encounters to strange energy that's hiding in the shadows. If you've got your own story to share or want to be a guest on the show, don't be shy. I would love to hear from you. Feel free to email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com and follow along on Instagram at darkfloridapodcast, and catch our videos and episodes on YouTube, which is youtube.com/darkflorida. And if you'd like to support the show, head to buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. Don't forget, spots are now open for the 2025 Caribbean Bigfoot Cruise, with legends like David Politis, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and Dr. Mira Mayer, for 7 days of lectures, adventures, and cryptid conversations on one of the biggest cruise ships in the world. Book your cabin now and use the code DARKFLORIDA to get $100 in free merch. Until next time, keep your eyes open, your boots muddy, and your flashlight handy. Because here in Dark Florida, you never know what's lurking just beyond the tree line. Stay curious and stay strange.